Welcome to the Venus Index Podcast. I'm John Barbin, and with me is Denise DeGrazi, and she placed fourth in our open contest. And for anybody who's in the community, they probably already you know who Denise is. She's one of our more vocal members. I think you're looked up to as a bit of a leader in the forum. And I always say that when you answer something, it's typically exactly as the way I would answer things. You answer things almost exactly as I would, right down to the little, like, ifs, ands, caveats, in brackets, and all that stuff. So, now let's get right into what we were just talking about, as far as the concept of you being a senior member and being a generational thing, that I was mentioning that I think your generation's one of the first ones to pick up the concept of weight training as a lifelong thing.
Yeah. Actually, I first started working out at a gym. This is crazy. Back in the late 60s, and it was a gym. My mom found this gym. Okay, my mom, who's 81 now, she found this little gym, and she joined, and it was run by an ex-bodybuilder, and it had a bunch of universal machines and some weights. And it was down in Belmont Shore, which is, you know, I live in a beach community, so it was near the beach, you know, and people are worried about how they look in swimsuits. I don't know how she found it, but I guess, you know, she was, at that time, she was probably in her, I don't know, late 30s. And, you know, she wanted to start looking better. I mean, women of her generation they have a different attitude than even my generation. Their whole thing was they wanted to do something. Working out was something you had to do to look better. Whereas I think women in my generation, and I'm a baby boomer, I was born in 1952. So there's kind of a mixed bag. It's you want to look better, but it's also we also realize a lot of us are aware of the fact that it will improve the quality of your life. You know, and as you get older, this becomes more important because you see your parents aging and you see your family members aging and you see how they're aging, and it's not pretty, you know, especially if they never did anything, you know, things like your mobility becomes really diminished if you didn't do anything. And it becomes clear that it's something you also do so that. Yeah, you know, whether or not a lot of us live longer, it's not so much the idea of living longer, but living a better quality of life, because there's no sense in living to be 90 if you're, you know, if you spend a lot of that time in pain or disabled or immobile, you know. I mean, that's my feeling. I've seen that. I've seen that happen to family members, so it's not really something you want to aspire to.
That's interesting that you said her generation actually adopted it for the sake of
Well,
looks, and then it switched to maybe, yeah. I don't know, maybe the research caught up a little bit?
Yeah, like, well, you know, okay, my mom's probably, she's older than Jane Fonda, and I don't know, Jane Fonda's like, what, in her 70s? Mm-hmm. You know, she just came out with something about, you know, working, about how she's worked out. And a lot of women, I think, at that time were probably aware of it, but, you know, it was more, you know, not so much bodybuilding, but something you did so that you look toned, you know, and so that's where that whole tone thing, and probably the lighter weights. It was interesting because this gym had, you know, they had universal machines, and they had, but they only went up to a certain point, you know, because it was a ladies' gym, and, you know, they had free weights, and I don't remember a whole lot about it except that I went there with my mom, and I really liked it. You know, I thought, oh, this is great. I love it, you know. And I was cranking up the weights, and I guess I've always...
How old were you when you started?
Well, I was like in my teens. You know, I was in high school. I was maybe a junior or a sophomore, so maybe like 15, 16. Mm. You know, the thing about my workout history, though, it was kind of sporadic. I mean, I did that for a while, and then, you know, when I got into college, I started... Listen, I have seen almost every fitness craze that's happened in the last 30, 35, 40 years. You know, jogging, okay, I started doing that. I lost maybe 10 pounds. And, you know, my weight would fluctuate, too. So, you know, but I went through all the things. You know, there was jogging, and I did that, and then I got married out of college, and I started putting on weight. So, you know, I've seen every diet fad too. I remember losing like 30 pounds doing this, and this is how I kind of knew about fasting. I did this protein sparing, a liquid protein diet. And I lost 30 pounds, and at that point, that was the lowest adult weight I'd been in. I got down to 115. But, you know, again, it started to creep up, you know, as time went on. And so I've had this sort of up, you know, slow up and down. And I think when that happened, when I was married, and that was like in the late 70s, I started working out again, and I bought some weights. And then at another point, I started working out at a bodybuilder gym. And then that guy went, all of a sudden, one day it shut because, I don't know, the guy ran off with some money or something. Anyway.
Hey, that happens more often than bodybuilders who run gyms.
Yeah, I'm sure it did. You know, and then I went to some of the big box gyms back in the 80s, you know, the gyms that had Nautilus and stuff like that. And I was working out then, but not really any kind of a program, you know. That kind of came a little bit later. Then in the 90s, you know, so I've been working out off and on, you know, almost all my adult life, but not necessarily continuously. So there'd be, you know, some little in-between spaces, you know, where I'd switch over to a different program. I remember doing another program called The Firm, which I think is still in business. It was a video, you know, the video workouts, and they promoted weight training, not necessarily huge weights, but, you know, I had some weights at home, and I worked out at home, because for me, going to the gym was one thing, and I did that for a long time. You know, I could get up at the crack of dawn, and, you know, it becomes time-consuming, and at another point I decided, okay, maybe I'll just work out at home, which, you know, I've always been very good about. When I work out, I work out, you know, I don't, you know, slack off. I just I do the workouts, you know, religiously. The big problem for me has always been diet, and I was never willing to, I mean, at some points I'd be willing to kind of cut back, but I never really got the whole concept of, I guess, you know, even though I have a science background, it's like diet is one of those things that you don't really want to think about, except when you look in the mirror and you go, oh man, I really have to lose weight. Boy, I look terrible, you know? And so then you cut back. You know, and because there's so much misinformation out there, you know, you keep trying different things, and then they, you know, they, then of course, in the 90s, I started working out at a gym actually here on campus. They opened up a gym, and it was a really good gym. It just closed up last year, but it, you know, they had free weight, they had everything, and they had a lifting platform, and at that point, I started working out again. And then I got into, you know, I was doing bodybuilder kind of workouts, and then I kind of gravitated towards the powerlifting because, you know, I'm strong and I like that, and I enjoyed that. But then I never really, it's like, you know how you associate with that kind of thing, but you're not competing, because I kind of felt like if I start competing, then it'll take over my life, you know.
I was the exact same way. I trained with a powerlifting team for about 2 years, and I never competed. And they were always like, "Oh, we got to get you in a suit. We got to get you up." And I'm like, "No." Yeah. I like the idea of training heavy and all that, but and they take their workouts dead serious, like every single rep.
Yeah,
you know. But same as me. I just didn't ever wanted to get up.
Yeah,
there
this compete. Gym was nice too, because there were actually Olymp lifters too. In fact, I used to work out with a guy who was a masters, and he was like second in the country. You know. Mm. Real big guy, and they were student athletes. It was a great gym, and it wasn't, you know, froofy. It didn't have like hot tubs and, you know, the kind of stuff they have at box gyms to attract people. It was a gym, but sadly, when the students, you know, they took up a fund to build what they call the Student Wellness Center here on campus, which just opened up last spring. It killed Frog's Gym. It really did. and a lot of people have sort of migrated over. But since I'm working out at home and I have, and then I got into, at a certain point I was power, you know, I was doing all these powerlifting workouts and I was getting injured a lot. I mean, I don't even want to go into all the different things that I tore, you know, and.
Was that just from just pushing heavy all the time?
Yeah. You know, I tweaked my rotator cuff, at least once, you know, that was probably benching, you know, I'm sure that didn't help.
It becomes a mindset, doesn't it?
Yeah. You figure out ways to work around it. Mm-hmm. And then you, you know, you keep working out. I mean, at one point it was like one of my arms, I actually couldn't press overhead. I mean,
yeah,
I'm sure I tore one of my rotator cuff muscles, but my God, the body heals.
It does heal, but when you're powerlifting, and I don't know if we're going on a tangent here. For some women, not all, but for some, the strength becomes like seductive. Like
it does.
It happens to guys too, but it happens just as easily to women that feeling of being strong.
Oh yeah.
It's so drug-like, kind of. Like, you just want to be stronger and stronger.
I'd go around the gym, and once in a while I'd see a girl who could bench more than me, and I'd think, wow, you know, I see this girl, and she's, like, benching 150 pounds, and I'm thinking, man, I wish I could, you know, do that, you know. And but, I mean, sometimes they were bigger girls, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, because you saw me. I'm not King Kong.
You're miniature.
Even when I was 30 pounds heavier, I still wasn't King Kong, you know.
Right.
I was just, you know, more padded. But probably my best lift, I was a good squatter, but my best lift was deadlift. I mean, I was a good deadlifter, you know. And, I mean, the men would just kind of go, whoa, you know. I mean, you become you're this fixture there in the gym, you know. Oh yeah, that's the girl that can, you know, deadlift 225, you know, for 5 reps, you know.
Oh yeah, because it's a talking point, because they'll be like, you'll never guess how much that girl over there can lift. Yeah. Because you're so tiny. Yeah
And actually the last time I was deadlifting, which was last time I was deadlifting big was last summer, and then I tore a had a small tear in my meniscus, which turned into a Baker cyst. You know, this is the kind of stuff that happens to you when you get old. And I thought, you know, I better let this heal. Because, I mean, I know that at a certain age, you know, and the kind of tear I had was one that comes from age. Hmm. It's a horizontal tear.
Right. So, okay. So going off of the powerlifting, and clearly you enjoy the strength, but have you ever gotten, I guess you haven't, have you gotten out of your system, like the desire to want to be strong, or have you just recategorized it a bit? Or
when I started, I mean, I think last summer I realized, you know, okay, I can't be doing this forever and tearing things and, you know, breaking down my body, because that's kind of counterproductive, really, at a certain point. At that point, I also realized I was at least 20 pounds heavier. No, I was about 20 pounds heavier. I thought, you know, because I was doing stuff like a lot of high impact stuff. And I had also gotten into kettlebell training, which I really, really like. I guess that's what kind of got me off the powerlifting kick, was getting into kettlebell training. And, you know, it's like a lot of different systems of training, like CrossFit and stuff like that, it can become a cult. Hmm. You know, the cult of kettlebells, you know, and there's a certain individual that, you know, has kind of built an empire on it, but I won't.
Have you like now recognized that you can get sucked into those things and put a barrier?
Yeah, it's a lot of it is like, yeah, it's like the tool becomes, it's like diets, you know, it becomes like a religion. It's like the thing becomes something that you worship. And to me, actually the best attitude, I think, as far as kettlebell training is, I really like the art of strength thing, although I know he's selling his stuff too, but at least it's a more open idea of looking at kettlebells as just one tool, you know,
yeah,
it's a tool.
Yeah.
It has its place for certain types of movements, and it's very good at that, and it can make you, man, it can make you strong in ways that, you know, the other things maybe you know, nuts are not so easy. And it can also give you a lot of functional, what they call, yeah, I guess the whole functional strength thing became mm-hmm. kind of a cult too.
Right.
But there's certain truth to that. I mean, you know, obviously if you want to be a distance runner, you've got to just, you know, do a lot of running. You know, and if you want to be an Olympic lifter, you just do Olympic lifts. But there is a certain amount of, most people are not doing that kind of thing. They just want to be fit and they want to be strong and they want to be healthy. So there is some of those functional moves do have some carryover into real life. Certainly things like squatting and deadlifting, you know, and, you know, swinging kettlebells. I can see where that definitely carries over into real life.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I think you said it. It's being able to categorize what it is. It's a tool, and it can have its place.
Yeah.
But it's not everything.
No, it's not the only way to work out. Mm-hmm. Just like body weight workouts are great for certain things, and I love them, but you're never going to get, you know, bull strong just doing that stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, if your goal is in fact to get strong, then you need to lift really heavy weights.
Sure.
But most people, you know, don't want to do that. And then it all boils down to, for a long time, I got off the whole bodybuilder parts, you know, working out parts. And I thought, nah, you know, that's just not cutting it for me. And that's where I got into the more total body strength thing. But now I realize that has its benefits too, you know, especially in terms of balancing out your body. And so I've kind of come full circle back to the idea of, well, for me, it's not just a matter of looking good in a swimsuit and looking good in clothes, which is definitely a real benefit from, you know, doing like the VI workouts. But there's also a functionality that as you get older, you know, you don't want to look and act your age in terms of how your body functions. You know, you want to be able to, I think it was Jack LaLanne that said that disability is not being able to do the things that you were able to do before. Mm-hmm. And so you don't want that to happen, because in my own family, I saw that happen to my grandmother. I mean, she lived to be 86, but about the last 5 or 6 years of her life, she was, you know, she developed spinal compression, and that was probably just from osteoporosis and bad diet. But, you know, she was hunched over. I mean, she could barely walk. It really, you know, and this was a person that she kept telling my mom, who was working out at this gym, oh, no, that's really bad for you. It's going to, you know, and in Spanish, it was something about it's going to relax your tissues, which doesn't even translate. But, you know, there used to be a lot of misconceptions about working out. For women, especially, you know, in older generations of women, and I don't know how old some of the women in your family are, but I mean, my grandmother was born in 1913, my mom was born in 1930, so they had some odd ideas about that stuff. And yet, there were women, you know, if you go back into the old strongman era, there were women that did that stuff. You know, there were strong women, there were bodybuilders, you know, some of the early ones, and they were really going against the grain, and you gotta give them credit for that.
Yeah, it really does seem like it's only been a couple generations, really.
Yeah, and even now, you know, you keep if you check the interwebs, there's always these stupid ideas about women shouldn't be lifting really heavy weights. You know, they should be doing more reps because it'll make you bulky. I mean, that, you know, that's like Dracula. Every time they stick a stake in it, it comes back from the dead. I mean, over and over. And it's, you know, it's like a bad horror movie. Mm-hmm. And this program should be proof that, you know, Jesus, you don't have to be like a monster, humongous person to be strong and to be fit. But, and you know, there's plenty of proof out there. I mean, even if you go to the Olympics and you look at some of the lighter weight categories, I mean, you know, everybody always looks at that and they go, weightlifters, oh, they all look like, you know, yeah, they all weigh 300 pounds. Well, yeah, if you're looking at the heavy, super heavyweights, but if you look at the flyweights, they look like normal people, mm-hmm. you know?
But they're just really strong.
They're just incredible. I mean, they can hoist three times their weight overhead, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, you've lifted as heavy as you can possibly lift, and I think you're I think you're in great shape, but you're not. I wouldn't call you bulky. Like,
No.
Doesn't make any sense at all when people actually think about what's being said versus what's actually happening.
I think you know, when women say they're going to get bulky, it, and this comes to the whole idea of getting leaner. There's bulk. Bulk is just bulk. And it, a lot of times bulk is, and same way with the guys, you know, these big, these guys, oh, I want to get big. Because, you know, I was at this gym for a long time, and I'd see these young guys, and some of them looked really good. And they go, well, I really want to get big. And I'm going, why? You look fine, you know? I mean, these guys were probably at AI, you know? Mm-hmm. And they wanted to get big.
I see guys do it all the time. They're actually at their AI, then they wreck it.
Because
they're big.
They're eating like,
and then they have to spend like years trying to get back.
Yeah, trying to get ripped, you know?
Yep.
And it's just so stupid. I mean, although I have had guys also tell me that they were using, you know, they were using. Mm-hmm. And that's not unusual either. So,
right. I think the bulking thing with women, and I don't know that people want to hear this, but I'm sure you'll agree with me, is that lifting heavy weights does make your muscles a bit bigger.
Yeah.
And if those muscles are covered in fat,
exactly,
your whole body just gets bigger.
I mean, when I weighed 140 pounds, I looked bulky. Mm. You know, I'm 5'1", and now I weigh 107. So, you know, when you saw me in Vegas, I'm not super skinny, but I'm not.
Well, you're not skinny. You're lean. You're ripped, but
yeah.
you're a tiny human being, yeah. But you're strong.
Yeah, but you can imagine 30 or 40 pounds more of fat on my form would make me look bulky.
Well, yeah, especially at your height.
Yeah, and it was especially evident in not just in my arms, but my legs, you know. I went from, and I think I've mentioned this on the forum, at one point when I weighed close to 150 pounds, I had 24-inch thighs, and I measured them recently. They're like 18 and a half. So that's a big difference.
Whoa, you had 24-inch thighs. I have 24-inch legs.
Yeah, exactly. You know?
Wow.
You know, it blew my mind when I measured them. I thought, really? God. I mean, and I keep losing, you know, from there. So, you know, by the way, the new program 3 is kicking my butt.
Go phase 2?
Yeah, phase 2.
Yeah,
it's that rocks. I'm stoked about that because I don't know if I can compete in the Open next time or not, but or the Super Open or whatever it is in January. I'm definitely going to be on. You know, I'm definitely want to get that last inch down on my waist and mm-hmm. You know, it's.
Did you say you got a DEXA done or something?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I did.
Okay, can you kind of talk us through that?
Yeah, because I work at a university and I know physiologists here, I actually work for anatomy and physiology in the biology department. One guy who works in physical therapy was running this program where they were doing DEXAs down in kinesiology. They have they had a DEXA machine and they were doing these tests, you know, and doing research basically. So I had one run then 2 years ago, right after I'd lost 25 pounds doing Eat Stop Eat. And at that point, you know, I think I weighed like 127 pounds. He said, well, he says you're 26% body fat. He says, which is actually very good because he said that they do a lot of students there. And he said, some of these girls, like the dancers, are like 30%, you know. So he says, whatever you're doing okay. But I thought, man, really? You know, that kind of sucks because, you know, I wanted to be leaner. And I remember there was a girl working in his lab. She was 16%. And I thought, yeah, I really like to, you know, get down. But, you know, I'd kind of come to a sort of a homeostasis point around 125 pounds, you know, because I was still eating too much, basically. Mm. You know, so that was in the beginning of 2009, I think January, that I had that done. So then I had the knee injury and I started thinking about it. And then I saw the Venus Index program come out and I bought it and I thought about it, you know, cause I tend to overthink this stuff and I'm like, oh man, you know, I'll have to go back to bodybuilding, you know, and I read it and I looked at it. Finally, you know, the first contest came up and I said, okay, you know, it's now or never, I'm going to do this thing. And so, you know, I started doing fasting, you know, sort of on speed there. And strangely enough, I thought that because of my age and the fact that I'm not cyclic anymore, that would be a problem to lose the body fat. But I'm telling you, I've been thinking about this. I think it actually might have helped because I'm not fighting estrogen anymore, you know, like I was when I was younger. You know, a lot of the women say, oh, I don't want to get down so low that, you know, I'm really lean. Well, I don't think you can if you're still having cycles. And I think this came up in the forum because I kept wondering, well, why can't I get my waist down so much? You know, but yeah, I had a DEXA done in June, another one. And unfortunately, the researcher that I was working with before, he shut down the program because he's about to retire and they don't have anybody, you know, doing that program right now. So I found San Diego State runs a research program too, and I actually drove down to San Diego and had a DEXA done. And it was a little bit, they use different software there, and they're doing a lot of studies there on obesity. So, you know, and it was in a research park, and they're all set up for it. And it takes like, you know, 10 minutes to do. And then she gave me the results, and she goes, you're 12% body fat. And I thought, really? I said, are you sure? And she goes, yeah. She says, I'm positive. I said, when did you have this thing calibrated? And she said, just like a week ago.
As if you're asking about the calibration.
Well, I mean, I'm going, I was floored. I had to, like, pick up my jaw from the floor because, and, you know, I never really thought about it, but I noticed that as I was, you know, cutting down, you know, I started seeing veins all over my, like, on my biceps and stuff. And I'd never seen that before. My ribs, you know, my ribs are like, I remember Kimberly talking about looking all greyhoundy. I mean, that's happened too, you know, and I started seeing myself in the mirror and thinking, God, I'm really looking, you know, kind of different. It's like, it's all come off, you know, it's coming off and yet, you know, strangely enough, I can't get my waist down that last, you know, three quarters, you know, to an inch down. And I don't know if it's that I've built up a lot of muscle on my back. Well, because there isn't that much fat there, but and then when I saw the DEXA, you know, they have all these things where they do a compartmental kind of thing, so you can see where different parts of your body, you know, are at different levels of body fat. And strangely enough, my legs, which is not strange because when I look in the mirror, I see that there's still fat on the backs of my legs and stuff. That hadn't changed that much, but my upper body and like the what do you call it, the Android fat was super low, so I guess I got rid of all that. But it may just be that's my body. I have this kind of little, you know, banana shape that I never noticed before because it was a pile of fat on it.
Well, Alan Elliott, did you hear his last interview on the guy side?
Yeah.
He said, I think you and him might be similar. Your training history and all the heavy lifting may have
thickened up. Well, it's not just the superficial stuff, but, you know, there's a lot of deep muscles in your back.
Well, there's layers. People don't understand that, you and I do, but people don't get how many layers of muscle there is that contribute to your trunk.
The abs and the core and stuff like that, but, man, you've got the, you know, all these deep back muscles and layers of spinal erectors, and, yeah, deadlifting can thicken that up in a hurry. But, you know, I'm not really worried about it because I realized when I looked at how much fat I have, and the fact that, you know, and I listened to that podcast about the military research and the starvation mode with great interest, but and I guess the reason why there isn't a whole lot of research on women is because, first of all, there aren't that many women who are that lean, and also they, you know, I think that women who are still fertile don't want to get that lean.
I don't think you can get ethical approval to do that.
No, and you can't get that lean, I think, because you're, you know, like a lot of the younger women, you're fighting estrogen hard.
Yeah, I think you can drive women down to, like, not
yeah,
the...
Yeah, but it's nasty.
It's hard. We'll put it this way. You can drive women down to their critical body fat level the same way you can drive in that study the way they did it to guys.
Sure, but you wouldn't want to.
I don't think you'll get ethical approval for it. It would literally have to be us just kind of doing it on our own, like this, and getting people to volunteer.
Now, you might be able to do that with... And see, I don't think there's any research, and it'd be interesting to do, you know, a PubMed search or something, because there isn't that much research on women, you know, who are basically menopausal or postmenopausal. But I have a theory, and it may be a half-baked theory, that once you get rid of that strong estrogen surge, well, a lot of things happen. I mean, I did lose some bone mass, you know, and the doctor got all bent out of shape about that. But it wasn't, I started out with a lot of bone mass. But I also think that you're not fighting that anymore. And so if you start eating less, a lot less, and you start fasting, it starts coming off.
Did you listen to Don's interview about, and when we talked about training girls for shows, and if they're on the pill, he was like he wouldn't even bother starting because it's just too hard.
Well, and you know, obviously women, just like men, our hormonal cycles vary, and some women, you know, have a real strong, you know, estrogen surge, and they have high levels. So and then if you add the pill onto that, or even if you don't, and you're just one of those people that I think the more body fat you have, also fat produces estrogen-like compounds, and that's why, you know, like real fat guys, you know, have developed breasts. And
well, that's something no one even considers, the fact that their current body size, the fat mass is not inert. Fat is for the amount of stuff fat actually secretes, like different neurotransmitter, hormones and different signals. It might as well be. You could almost argue that fat contributes more to what's going on and communicates more than muscle.
Yeah, it's an endocrine organ, I think.
Oh, it is. It is. Yeah, for sure it is.
Yeah. And on top of that, you know, there's a lot of stuff, environmental stuff, that may be disturbing endocrine, you know, that the estrogen or estrogen mimicking compounds. I mean, I've even heard that soy can do that. And, you know, another friend of mine here at work who's also menopausal, she was saying, I stopped doing the soy because it was doing some weird stuff to me, you know. And I noticed that too. And then now they're saying that, no, it doesn't work for hot flashes. Well,
Well, you know, if it's studied, that doesn't mean it.
Nah, it could mean bupkis.
It just means in that study, that's what they found. It doesn't mean that that's not happening. It may need to be re-examined another way.
And it's probably the type of soy and the amount. And
all that stuff.
Yeah,
right?
And plus, like I said, there's a lot of stuff environmentally that you know, is in food and water and air, and people don't even think about it, but some of that stuff may be having an effect on its, well, it definitely on children. I mean, kids now are... young women now are, and it's also because they're fatter and they're eating more, are getting cycles earlier and earlier, and that's pretty disturbing.
Yeah, I think the like you said, how some women just have a higher their swings are just higher. I think that's why girls are harder to handle. How am I saying this?
Yeah,
they require a bit more coaching for this sort of stuff, whereas guys are a lot more predictable.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah.
You could take 10 guys, give them all the same thing, and get really similar results.
Sure.
And I mean, and everyone here at Venus did a really good job too. But everyone's story's got a little bit of a special tweak to it. For one thing, so many different people that might be using birth control. Then like yourself, whether or not you're postmenopausal or not, and then if you're going through a pregnancy or not, if you're nursing, then whether or not you just respond to your.
Yeah,
cycles, all that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, like I think it was Cass, you know, she just had a baby and she's nursing, you know. Yeah, that can affect all kinds of things.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah, totally.
And then there's, you know, there's some of the women that are a little younger than me, but they're, you know, hitting their 50s and stuff. And at some point, you know, they're going to start going through the change, too, which is not the end of the world, really, ladies. I can tell you at least my own experience. And I think I was talking to... who was it? There was a guy sitting next to me at the first Vegas dinner. Was it Richard Lane?
Yeah.
I kind of have another cockeyed theory about why a lot of women have such horrible problems with hot flashes, and I think it has to do with the stress in your life. And a lot of women in their 50s, you know, they have either kids in high school, kids in college, you know, job problems, problems with their parents getting old, problems with their marriages, you know, and it's just a money problems. There's just a bucket load of stress that you get when you hit that age. You know, what am I going to do with the rest of my life? Do I have enough money to retire? All this crazy stuff. And people who just crumple under that kind of stress, it the few times that I got hot flashes, and I got some, but it wasn't enough to, like, go on hormone replacement. I noticed them when I was either under pressure or under some kind of stress.
Yeah.
So I think that that's a big factor, and obviously some people, you know, are going to have just way more stress, or they respond to stress differently. I mean, I know one woman that I work with. I mean, she was just a wreck, you know, and she's having hot flashes, and she had to go on hormones, and then she didn't like that, and she had to go, well, you know. So everybody's going to respond to that a little differently. But if, you know.
You can't control for that in a study either, stress.
No, you can't. And it's probably the same thing with things like heart disease and hypertension. You know, you can't control for that.
That's because there's two things. There's the actual stress you're going through. And then there's your, I guess you could say, innate, and your nature. Are you the type that handles stress well or not? And that comes back to nature and nurture.
Right.
So if you, so there's no such thing as a homogenous group of people to study.
No.
And if you pick a bunch of people who are going through a loss, like a loss of a loved one, or a loss of something, or a loss of a job, and you're like, you think you're controlling for that particular stressor. You don't know if they've handled that loss before.
No.
If it's just, it's way too, like, I studied that stuff at Florida, like the way your emotions and stress interact with health, and you literally have to take a profile of the entire person's life and then do that with everybody in your study to see if. I think the number one problem with studies is it's assuming people are a homogenous group, which they aren't.
No.
And like you said, the stress thing affects just about anything you're going to try to study. So no matter if you so you age match them, you training experience match them, whatever you want to match. How do you match how people deal with stress?
No, you don't. You don't. You can't. And I think that that's stress is a major factor in disease, and it's very hard to study, and it's very hard to factor into a lot of these studies, and especially where they ask people things, or even things like dietary studies where they ask people, well, what did you eat? Well, okay, really? You're going to remember
that's, there's
that?
No point in even asking, because people aren't going to tell the truth.
That's crazy, you know, or we don't even want to get into people's sex lives. I mean, that's like a whole bag of lies, you know, too. So.
Yeah, totally. And that's, man, I mean, we could just go off on how impossible it is to study people. I mean, so much easier to study a rat because you can control everything, whereas a person's going to lie about just about everything.
Yeah. Rats don't lie. Dogs don't lie. Cats don't lie. They just are, you know.
People just don't tell the truth.
Yeah, people don't. That's right. People don't tell the truth. But yeah, that's – I think that – So older women, you know, women who are coming into their 50s and they're worried about how they're going to do on a program like that. Well, way better than you think. And you might actually be able to get leaner than you ever imagined. Because in a million years, I would have never thought that I'd be able to get down to this. And, you know, now I'm in a point where I'm kind of maintaining and I'm learning how to do that. And I think that that's where you start looking at some of those things that bodybuilders do. You know, where that might make sense. I think Jim Pixie was talking about that too. You know, little dietary tweaks, you know.
Brad Pelon and I are working on some research on that right now. We're kind of putting the puzzle pieces together on the concept of a reverse calorie taper.
Right.
So instead of dieting such that the leaner you get, like you hammer the diet harder, we're starting to actually uncover what seems to be proof that you have to do it in the reverse.
Yeah.
So when you have a lot of fat to lose, that's when you hit the calorie deficit hard.
I mean, I tried doing I can do a 24-hour fast still, but anything longer than that, it's just getting hard, and especially starting a new workout program.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Tuesday, I felt, you know, I did the first workout on Monday, the new program, and that went well.
Are you on the intermittent supersets?
Yeah. But then Tuesday, I was going to do a quick kettlebell thing, and I did it, and man, I felt like I'd been hit by a truck, and I'm going, oh. You know, and I was actually sore. I've been sore off and on. So, you know, this, whatever it is, maybe it's just because it's switching up and adding more reps and adding different types of things. Whatever it is, I think it's going to, you know, kick my butt, and that's good, because, you know, you don't want to keep doing the same old stuff over and over again, because you'll just get the same results. Mm-hmm.
But so do you think you need to up your calories a little bit now?
Well, you know, I'm kind of experimenting with smaller, you know, maybe two meals a day rather than one big meal a day, because sometimes I just get hungry. And then, you know, plus you start finding out, maybe tweaking the macronutrients too. Like I thought, you know, I wanted for the next contest, even if I'm just doing it in shadow, or, you know, the big open in January, I want to get that last inch down, which probably means not 5 pounds, but somewhere between 3 and 5 pounds of fat. I have like 13 pounds of fat, or at least that's what it said on the DEXA. Right. So, you know, okay, if I drop down to 10% or less, I'm not going to die, and it's not going to be, you know, I don't think it's going to do me any big harm, but it's not going to be fun either.
I think it might be a little trickier to do it. Yeah. My thought process is that at the level of leanness you are now, you're bumping up against what technically is considered critical, like the low end, yes, for women. So my thought is it actually has to happen, or at least I'm thinking it has to happen in a couple of days deficit, a couple of days maintenance, a couple, right, of days deficit. Right. You know, something more like that, where, yeah, it's, yeah, not even practical to imagine.
A cycling, a kind of calorie cycling.
Yeah, and just dipping below and then back up and dipping below.
Yeah.
And just accepting the fact that it's you've got to take it way slower.
Yeah, yeah. So it's also, I think the workouts, you know, because they seem a little more demanding, I might be able to, and I don't know if this is possible, but, you know, even some recomposition, you know, like maybe gaining a little bit more, you know, even a pound of muscle, I mean, geez, or a half a pound, I mean, here and there would make a difference, you know.
Well, I think about that. If you don't change your body fat at all, but you add a bit of muscle, your percentage is still going down.
Yeah, yeah, body fat. Yeah, exactly. But mainly I do want to get a little bit of the fat off, maybe around my back. You know, not that you can pick and choose your spots, but, you know, it's got to come from somewhere, and there aren't too many places. You know?
There isn't much left to go. Yeah,
oh,
yeah, for sure.
No, but even a few millimeters, you know, could make a difference in I think, you know, in your circumference, yep, you know, of the waist, and so just enough. And I have noticed a real tiny movement. I mean, I've only measured myself maybe once or twice since I got back from Vegas, and I detect a little bit of a movement there, you know, not like massive, but, you know, I'm like a pound or two down from the end of the contest. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah. I mean,
were you really paying attention, or just sort of happened?
No. And then I got like food poisoning right before I went to Vegas, and you know, but fortunately that only lasted a day or two. I don't know maybe I picked that up at the beach shoot, you know?
Oh yeah. No, those pictures were great.
Yeah. Actually, I mean, next time I do the shoot, I'm going to go for more of a studio thing where they do lighting, you know, because I think that would show the definition more.
Yeah, well, I mean, when I met you, I was like, your definition shows in your pictures for sure, but when I met you, I was like, whoa, you were even leaner than I expected.
Yeah, yeah, and I guess tinier. Everybody says, God, you're so small, you know.
No, you're pretend size, you're so small.
You know. Yeah. You know, people thought I was huge in those photos, but
you know, it there is an illusion there. Like I wish people listening could tell. I mean, obviously anyone who's met you knows how like small you are, but
yeah.
In your pictures you look, I don't know, I don't want to, you just look bigger. I totally thought you'd be way bigger, and when I saw you I'm like, where's the rest of her?
Yeah. It's like somebody was saying they saw God, was it Sylvester Stallone, you know, in person? And they said, you know, he's not that big. Yeah. I go, really? You know, because, you know, he looks huge, or at least he did then. you know. So sometimes people are surprised, you know, when they see people in pictures and they're all buffed up and they're, you know, pumped and stuff. Although I didn't really carb load a lot. I just a little bit, but not like, I didn't go through the whole water depletion. I mean, you know, I don't know, unless you're like...
It's something to test out if you want to, and that's why I tell everyone, like, if you're gonna if you're gonna try it, you might as well do it, but give yourself 3 days of pictures, and then everyone does a round of pictures and realizes how exhausting pictures are, and like, oh my god, I don't want to do too many days of that.
Or in this case, I had a photographer, so you know, you hire them for a certain amount of a certain period of time, and
of hours, and stuff?
Next time, of course, this girl went back to. Colorado, which is where she was from, but I'm going to find a different one, somebody that actually has a studio, which would be helpful, you know, to do the lighting, because it's you know, it's, you can do that stuff yourself, but it's really hard.
Yeah, and I mean, and that's why if you're going to be working to the point where you get into this kind of shape,
just pay somebody to do it.
Well, even if you don't, put the effort in to get it done, to get good pictures done. I respond, I don't know where I said it. Somebody was talking about the idea of, somebody responded on one of the blogs on the guys about why do you do the before and afters with all the fancy lighting and why not just do like same spot, same light, same everything. And my answer was, well, would you take the worst picture possible on your wedding day? Like, would you take, if this is... So if you're getting in really good shape, take a good picture.
Yeah.
Like the point, and the point is, there is, I've never seen a studio or lighting that can take 50 pounds off somebody. Like,
no.
If you don't have the body, the lighting doesn't give you the body.
Even
all it does is show off what you have.
Maybe Photoshop might help a little, but you know.
Well, if you like hack away at it, but in general, 30 pounds ago, I can't put lights on you or me and just make us look better. That's impossible.
No.
Like, but when you look really good, if you go stand in a bad room, it can just take away everything you actually have.
Everything looks flat, you know.
Oh yeah, you can take the person who just finished winning a fitness show and put them in a bad room with bad lighting,
and they go,
you never know they're in shape. You wouldn't even know they're in shape.
No.
So it's kind of like people like it's not. I don't like the idea that I like the idea of taking what you got and showing it off.
Exactly.
So I don't know if everyone saw Jason Gottlieb's pictures, but
you have to
look at them because that's how you do it.
Yeah, no, that's what I want to have done. I find a photographer. Actually, we have.
What I'm trying to do is show everyone that you and a cover model are no different. Like once you're in shape, you look just as good as the girl who's on the cover of Self or Shape or whatever.
Well,
she just happens to be in a studio and you're not.
Yeah, of course, in my case, and this is another thing that for older women comes up, your skin doesn't look like it did when you were 18.
Oh, right, yeah. But you see, you know what I mean by lighting, right? And in general, the whole concept.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I agree with that. But yeah, the skin, you know, the sagging skin or the loose skin issue is something. And I think I want to see how that plays out because, you know, before you go having some a plastic surgeon, before you start going to plastic surgeons, you know, you want to see if sometimes the skin will shrink up on its own a bit.
Well, that's what Brian said, right? Like you have to.
Yeah, you just have to give it a little time.
He wants girls to get as lean as possible and then, or at least get lean and stay that way. And then he can do an assessment. Otherwise, he's like, well, there's no point in coming to see him until you're lean.
No, you know, because a lot of times, you know, like a lot of plastic surgeons make a ton of money on these mommy tucks. But you see the before and after pictures. I mean, because you can go online and actually see these photos, and you think, you know, if she just lost another 30 pounds or 20 pounds, you know, maybe that wouldn't have. But, you know, here again, you know, if you stretch the skin out over time, you know, and everybody's skin is a little different. So
right, and its tensile strength changes over time. Yeah. It's elasticity and all that stuff.
Collagen, the elastic fibers start to break down, too.
So. Yeah.
But
so, I mean,
but I know that there's other women out there that are having those issues too, and you know, you get self-conscious about it, but a lot of that can be made worse or better with your fluid levels, because I notice if I'm dehydrated, it looks worse.
Oh, right. Okay, interesting.
Yeah, and I also started wearing compression garments, like at night, because I think, you know, well, when you have plastic, when people have plastic surgery or any kind of surgery for that matter, they put compression garments on you just to shrink, you know, to prevent the edema, you know, and so that can help kind of help the skin go back to its shape. Plus, some of those sports compression garments are good if you if you're sore. You know, I think I kind of turned Kimberly on to a particular...
Oh, after a workout?
Yeah, a particular brand that I found that I just love them. They're seamless, too, which counts for a lot. Because there's nothing worse than having, you know, seams rubbing on you. But, oh, yeah, in fact, I did a workout, it was a bodyweight workout, and I kept thinking, God, I started getting a raw spot somewhere, and I'm going, what's that about? And then I realized what it was. It was a seam. You know, it had rubbed a place in my back raw.
Oh, geez.
I'm going, ah, you know.
You think the manufacturer would have thought about that.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing. And I don't know if men's garments are like women's garments, but why do they put tags? I mean, I know why they put tags, but, you know, the whole...
Oh, yeah.
I have this thing about tags in underwear and, oh, God, we don't want to talk about bras and any kind of undergarments. It's like, or even jeans, you know, because there's bare spots there. And
especially when it's got like itchy, scratchy
yeah,
stitching
and
stuff.
I take a file and file it down. I mean, in some cases, I actually rip the thing out. But I think they're getting a little better about that. Some of the more forward companies have realized that the tagless and seamless is a good idea. But
yeah, totally. I mean, yeah. Oh God, I've got a couple of things where I've had to rip the tag out because it just drives me mental.
Yeah, but for workout wear, it's essential because you know
you're removing repetitively. If you're gonna wear a spot through your skin, that's when you're gonna do it.
Especially
in the gym.
If it's stuff like you know, compression garments or shorts, you know, that are tight. You know.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. You don't want anything rubbing there. But yeah,
right. we're just all over the place.
Yeah,
right now.
I know.
All right, well let's reel it back in. So we went. We covered a lot of stuff. So I guess one of the things that obviously you practice and preach and living proof is that there's no such thing as lifting heavy weights. It will bulk you.
No.
And again, that bulking, like you said, bulk is bulk. That's
yes.
Unfortunately, anyone who thinks weights is bulking them, it's not.
It's
fat.
It's all those frappuccino, mocha latte, humongous muffins the size of your head that you're eating, you know, and you got to stop doing that. Yeah, I mean, you know, people think they're... The other thing, which is a real bug for me, is people think they're eating healthy, and the idea of clean eating... well, obviously, you know, you wouldn't want to live on Twinkies or anything like that. I never eat that stuff myself, but if you're going to indulge once in a while and that's your thing, okay, you know, but you don't make a diet of it, obviously. But on the other hand, it's like the people who become involved in the cult of the kettlebell or the cult of CrossFit or the cult of whatever, you know, the orthorexia or the food becomes a religion, and that drives me nuts too, because human beings have survived on all kinds of food and you know, even thrived on different diets. So it's not about the diet or the macronutrients, it's really about the quantity of food that people are shoveling into their mouths, which now has become just, I mean, in my lifetime I've seen things go from being really tiny to really humongous. And then
do you actually have some kind of memory history of actually noticing it get bigger?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It started happening in the 80s, I think.
Yeah.
Stuff started creeping up, you know, just in I think it really happened, you know, to my generation, you know, baby boomers, you know, they wanted more of everything. But yeah, and I think we've had discussions about this on the forum about, a lot of stuff conspiring to make people fatter. The fact that they don't move as much, a lot of people have sedentary desk jobs, as I sit here on my butt in front of a computer, you know, things like that. And also people don't walk as much because, you know, jogging for a half hour a day is just, it's not the same as digging ditches, you know, for 8 hours a day.
Yeah.
And it's just not.
Sure. I remember seeing a research paper that said no amount of working out in the gym can ever match having an active job.
No, no. Or like those soldiers. I mean, yeah, no amount of working out at the gym is going to replicate that. I mean,
because think of what you're trying to say. You're trying to say, is there some way of working out that could match 8 hours of activity? The only way you could match it is by having an eight-hour workout, which means your job would have to be working out.
Marching for 8 hours with a 60-pound pack on your back, you know, or breaking rocks for 12 hours a day, you know, with a sledgehammer, which very few people do anymore. But
Cass said that. I interviewed Cass earlier today, and she said when she was in the military, she ate whatever she wanted and couldn't keep weight on because they were doing that stuff all day long.
Yeah, they send you out for a four-hour march. Or an obstacle course or you know, stuff, crazy stuff like that. Or, you know, if you were snowshoeing across the Arctic.
You know what it is? I think people just don't realize how little they actually, like how miserably sedentary we really are.
No, it's gotten worse. When I was a child, I walked like 3 or 4 miles to elementary school, you know. I mean, really. And people didn't worry about their kids. My mom worked. I was a latchkey kid. You know, she worked because she had to, and my parents split up. But, you know, she didn't think anything of it. And I walked to and from school. And now, you know, parents are like hovering over their little darlings like, oh, my God, you know, some pedophile's going to grab him if I, you know, blink for 2 seconds. And, you see, I drive by the elementary school and there's cars, you know, big SUVs lined up, you know, dropping off the little darlings. I mean, okay, I understand people are very protective of their children, but my God, you know, in life they're going to be exposed to a lot of things. And, you know, walking is probably not a bad thing. I remember walking to school, riding my bike, you know, with other kids, playing outside for hours, and nobody, you know, nobody was worried about, I mean, they just told you don't talk to strangers, you know, and you didn't. And you know, you saw somebody weird, you avoided them. It's not.
So is it really getting that much worse, or is it just people? You know, the question, are people just paranoid?
I think people are paranoid. The media is much more prevalent and has made people just
scared. Oh, the media is just be scared of everything, on alert all the time.
Yeah, and I mean, listen, it's not like creepy people haven't been around, because going back centuries, there's always been, you know, child kidnappers and pedophiles and creeps out there, and you always had to be on the lookout, and children have always been at risk. But it's not like it's part of life.
Yeah, it's not like the incidents are going up. It might just be that we're maybe more aware of them because of the way information flows around.
I think we're far more aware of it, although sensational journalism is not new either. That goes, and child kidnappings are not new, or any of that stuff, but children don't ride their bikes. I don't see them walking. You know, they're hooked up to little electronic devices. Their idea of play is those Wii things?
I mean, it's just bizarre that I find it bizarre that it's even gotten to the point where people think that that's something to do with physical activity and all of that now turns into you're interfacing with a screen and something on the floor. It's like that is nothing like going outside and actually running around.
I think that's why people get such weird ideas about food and about nature and about, you know, animals, and, you know, because they have no experience with the real world. You know,
I think to some degree people are losing touch with the human condition itself.
Yeah,
like we're not really built to be this sedentary, and also it's all of this is happening so quickly. It's, I suppose you could argue that it could just be an evolutionary selective pressure, and the people who are evolved to handle this will just persist.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, but
it's, that would be a kind of a sad statement if that's the direction things go too, right?
So when I mean we all saw that horrible you know, tsunami, earthquake thing happened in Japan, and it made me think, you know, all it would take would be something like that to just shut off all those electronic devices. Because, you know, if that's cut off, there's a whole generation of people that don't know how to function any other way. It's like...
Yeah, it's interesting how into people's houses... So I don't know if you realize this, but a few years ago, a massive chunk of the grid went down in the northeast United States, all the way into southern Ontario.
Yeah.
And, like, tons of millions and millions of people were displaced. And that was a night where everyone actually left their house in the middle of the night because there was nothing else to do. Once and everyone just went outside and started hanging out with each other.
Yeah.
And it was because the lights were out and there was nothing inside your house sucked and there was no TV to watch and there was nobody around.
Yeah.
And so everyone went outside and they were forced, like technology failed them and they were forced to go back out and just be people.
Yeah, no, I know. A few years ago, there was a power outage in the town where I live, you know, and just one section, you know, and yeah, I ended up going to bed at 9 o'clock at night because you got no lights. You got, you know, actually I slept better then because all the lights were out.
Right. Yeah. It was actually dark for once.
Yeah. Dark for once, you know, kind of funny, but yeah, people have to learn, people don't know how to function any other way. And it's really pulled us away from our nature.
How we're built.
Yeah.
Our nature. And that's the thing, like doing, I find it interesting that a couple of people who were, you know, seeing what the girls did in the first contest and even in this contest and how much, you know, the cardio, some kind of movement or cardio plus the workouts and people, wow, you did so much. And I'm thinking to myself,
no,
they're just getting back up to how, what we're supposed to be doing as people.
Yeah. No, there's a lot of stuff that I try to do all the time that I wouldn't consider it cardio. It's just daily activity. Like I park my car down, you know, at the bottom of a hill, you know, in the campus that I work in, my building's up on a hill and I just park down at the bottom, you know, and I walk up every day, you know, I mean, there's a closer parking lot, but I go, why? You know, it's always packed. It's always hard to get parking there anyway. So I just park further out and I walk a couple times, you know, at lunch I go back and forth and then walking my dogs. I have two little dogs. Unless it was on like electrical storm or something and it was just pouring rain, I take them out every day, even if it's just for a half hour, you know, a couple times around the block. I don't really consider that cardio because I mean they're stopping and sniffing every 2 seconds, but it's you're outside, you're looking. You're meeting your neighbors. You're looking at, you know, people.
Movement is movement. It's
movement
the point.
Is movement.
Yeah.
I mean, it's when you see what happens to people when they don't move, it's the body falls apart very quickly.
Yeah, it's. I don't think I've said it much, but use it or lose it is exactly how your body functions.
Yeah. No. They're finding, you know, studies show that the more you use your body, the more it helps your brain, you know.
Oh yeah, there's that link too. Yeah, it kind of keeps you young from a. Like, I suppose you could say it keeps you mentally young to some degree. It helps stay or helps.
Yeah, I think,
postpone or prevent the degenerative brain diseases too.
Right. I think there's something they call executive function of the brain that exercise, you know, and physical activity helps with that. And I've kind of seen it, you know. Well, I went through some health sort of crises with my mom, and here's a case of somebody who did all the things that you're supposed to do, but you know, you just don't know in life what's coming down the road, and she got something that I'd never even heard of, and it might be because she was in a couple of car accidents or something, and there was some sort of head trauma, but she developed a fluid buildup in the ventricles of the brain, and we didn't know what was going on. I mean, she started having some problems, and finally, I ended up taking her to the emergency room, and they were able to diagnose it with a CAT scan. And they put a shunt in her brain, and it was fairly immediate, although unfortunately, she's lost her short-term memory. You know, the other thing I'm finding out too is that as time goes on, the brain is fairly plastic, so sometimes the brain can, even though there's been damage, can kind of rewire parts of itself. And it's an interesting thing, although it's not a lot of fun.
No.
You know.
But training can keep up that plasticity.
Yeah, and, you know, I wish I could get her back into, you know, she was having some problems with balance, and it, to some extent, this disease that she has causes a kind of odd gait, you know, and there's a little bit of balance issues. I kind of wish I could get her to to work with somebody, and there may be a program here at school where kinesiology students or physical therapy students can work, you know, with her balance a little better, although she doesn't fall anymore, which is...
Well, that's huge. Falling is pretty dangerous.
But it's not, you know, certain things, uneven things can kind of throw her off, you know, so I'm a little afraid about her, you know, like taking the dogs for a walk by herself and stuff.
Right.
Because, you know, she's got some impairment, but it's been a real learning experience. And, you know, people my age, I mean, they're going to start experiencing this kind of stuff with their families. It's just inevitable.
Well, okay, so then I guess this would be a good point to finish off. And what's your take-home message then? Like, what kind of, you know, what's your message to the Venus crowd?
You do it. I mean, obviously, you know, so you'll look good, and that's a real, you know, boost and everything. But as you get older, it's not just about that. It's also about your ability to age, not just gracefully, but functionally. It's the use it or lose it thing. If you just think that you're not going to have to do anything and everything's going to be fine, that's just not the case, because we evolved to move, and if you don't do that, it will go down fast. I mean, I've seen it with, you know, like I said, I've seen it with my grandmothers. Both of them, you know, ended up with you know, with some breaking hips or, you know, mobility issues, and it doesn't make your life better, you know. So working out, there's something to be said for it. I'd rather go out like, and you have to Google this guy, Joe Rolino, who was an old-time strongman. There was a really great obituary of him in the New York Times. He was 104 years old, and he used to walk every day, and he walked to the gym, and he was walking to the gym, and he got hit by a bus, and he died. And that's how he died. You know, so, I mean, it's kind of tragic, obviously, but...
But the moral of the story is he was fully functional and fully capable walking at 104.
Yeah, he was still walking to the gym. I mean, same with Jack LaLanne. You know, he was, what, 98, and he got hit with pneumonia, and he died, but he died very quickly. I mean, yeah. I would much rather have that happen because, you know, we're all going to die. But you don't want that kind of lingering disability, which is... for the most part, I think, preventable to some extent.
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, you know, you can't prevent cancer, you can't prevent strokes and things like that entirely. You know, eventually something's going to, you know, it's going to take you down. But you want to be able to function pretty much till the end, you know, rather than be a burden on your family or have, you know, have to, you know, have your family put you away somewhere.
Yeah.
That's just a terrible thing.
Yeah, I don't know. I think some people have this idea that it has to end miserably, but it really doesn't.
No,
so
no,
you can be functional right up to the end.
No,
so
no, I mean, and you know, if you're lucky, I mean, one of my grandmothers who lived to be 86. She did everything they tell you not to do, and somehow she managed to spend all but the last week of her life at home. You know, she managed. She stopped driving. She found somebody to drive her places. I mean, you know, she couldn't walk very well, but she still managed to get around. And it's better to not end up, you know, having to be put in a nursing home. And you know, I read somewhere that one of the major causes, especially for, and this is a take home for women, all these ladies that didn't want to work out with weights because they'd get bulky. Well, you know, then their little chicken legs can't get their bottoms on and off the toilet anymore. And then you need help, and then you end up in a nursing home, or you become so so frail that you fall because your muscles aren't, you know, they're not there to support your body. I mean, is that, what benefit is that? I mean, you were better off if you worked out with weights and got a little bulkier. You know?
Yeah, no kidding.
I mean, all these crazy, you know, and here again, you know, that the whole thing about not lifting heavy weights, you know, and there's still a few people who are pushing that idea, or you just do, you know, yoga or Pilates, which are good in themselves for what they do, but they're not going to make you they're not going to build your muscles, you know. Even jogging, you know, or running is not really a muscle builder. You need the resistance training. I think that they are finding that resistance training is even more critical for women because we start out with less muscle to begin with.
And then your potential for bone density loss is higher. The weight training has a double importance on women, is building up muscle mass and keeping your bone density.
Yeah, and the muscle mass, I think, is important too, because the stronger your muscles are, the less likely you are to fall or, you know, become, you know, stumble or.
Oh, yeah, totally. It improves strength, your recoverability when you do stumble, all that stuff.
Yeah. It's your balance, you know. It's not just the weak bones, but balance is critical, and balance can be affected by your muscles.
Yeah, I think we could go on, but yeah. I think this is a good place to leave it.
Yeah, you don't have to fall apart as you get old, and I'm trying to. I mean, I'm a free range experiment in that, and so I want to see how that, you know, turns out. But I know that there's people who have gone before who. Gone on to old age, you know, and still been able to function pretty much till the end. So that's where you want to take this stuff eventually.
Yep, that's the message, man. It's use it or lose it, and be functional for as long as possible.
Not all about vanity, and you know, vanity is great, and everybody wants to look good as they get older. But you know, you're not going to look like you did when you were 18. Just not. You could look better, even in some ways.
All right. I think that's a good place to leave it.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. Well, that was great.
That was good. Thanks.
All right.
So for Denise DeGrazia, I'm John Barbin, and that's your Venus Index Podcast.